Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Numbers, chapter 15, verses 1 through 31. We won't finish the whole chapter. In this section, we'll talk about laws, about sacrifices, and unintentional sins. Our context is this. In our last chapter, we saw the people of Israel rebel because the spies came back, 10 of the spies came back and said, "There are giants in the land, the fortifications are great, we can't conquer these Canaanites." And as a result, at the end of the chapter, Israel was defeated by the Amalekites and Canaanites when they took out anyway and decided to take the land without Moses or the tabernacle with them, and despite the fact God had told them to double back and go to the Red Sea. So now we're going to have a little interlude from history. We're going to go back to some Levitical type stuff, some laws. And since I've gone over that in great detail in the video, the audios covering the previous book of Leviticus, I'm not going to emphasize the law. I'm not going to treat the laws with as much details as I did in Leviticus. However, there are some stuff that's added in Numbers, which things are kind of interesting. So we'll look at that. So we start with Numbers 15, verses 1 through 3. "Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when you enter the land where you are to live, which I am giving you, then make an offering by fire to the Lord, a burnt offering or a sacrifice to fulfill a special vow, or as a freewill offering, or in your appointed times to make a soothing aroma to the Lord from the herd or from the flock.'" Now verse 1 says, "Now the Lord spoke to Moses." How many times have we seen that, both in the book of Leviticus, the book of Exodus, and now the book of Numbers, in this one chapter, as the NIV Study Bible says? There are three sections in this chapter, and they all start off with "the Lord spoke to Moses," verse 1, verse 17, and verse 37. He says, the Lord says in verse 2, "Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when you enter the land," not if you enter the land, "when you enter the land," which seems to show that God is expecting them to make it. This is right after chapter 14, when God says you're all going to fall in the wilderness, i.e. all you numbered men, 603,550 of you are going to die. Probably 549 because Caleb was accepted, but you know what I mean. There's a lot of people going to die, and God promised all that judgment because of their sin and rebellion and complaining and griping. But in the midst of all that, right after all that, he talks about grace. "When you enter the land, which I am giving you." Giving is grace, right? I'm giving you this land, even after you have done all, even after your fathers, at least, have done all this sin. Now we're going to talk about fire offerings. Verse 3, God said to Moses, "Then make an offering by fire to the Lord when you enter the land." This is assuming this is not in the wilderness, but when they get into the promised land. Now, fire offerings, there were four of them. There was the burnt offering, there was the peace offering, there was the sin offering, and then there was a trespass offering. The only two that are going to be mentioned here are the burnt offering and the peace offering. As we go through here, I'm going to show you that the guilt offering is probably not mentioned here. It's probably not included, probably not the sin offering either. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown even say that you can narrow it down even further and say that the sacrifices mentioned in these verses are only referring to a peace offering. And the term burnt offering is not a technical word for a type of sacrifice, a burnt offering sacrifice, but rather is used in a general sense to describe the aforementioned peace offering by fire. In other words, the peace offering is burnt, so therefore we're going to call it a burnt offering. I don't want to go there. Let's just say there's two offerings, burnt offering and a peace offering. Now, this idea of using burnt offering to refer to a peace offering is seen in Exodus 18:12, where it's not used in a technical sense. "Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took a burnt offering and sacrifices for God, and Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat a meal with Moses' father-in-law." Now, if you eat a meal, it's not a burnt offering, because burnt offerings are whole burnt offerings, a holocaust. They're completely burnt up on the altar, except for the hide, of course. There's nothing left over to eat a meal with. So here, that's a peace offering, a fellowship offering. And so Moses, Aaron, and Jethro, all the elders of Israel, are eating a meal with Jethro, and that meal's got to be a peace offering, not a burnt offering, and yet it's called a burnt offering. There's also another scripture, which unfortunately I don't have in front of me, but I found it before. In fact, we've already talked about it in a previous audio, where a verse in Leviticus refers to sin offerings as a burnt offering. And that's a ball of wax trying to untangle that one. I did it back in Leviticus. I won't mention it again since this is just tangential to what we're talking about here. So we're going to assume a burnt offering and a peace offering. If you call a burnt offering from the flock, from the herd, it could be a goat or a ram or a sheep from the herd or from the herd. It could be a bull, your choice. Peace offering, of course, was any animal from the flock of the herd. Actually, I spoke myself too broadly about the burnt offering. A burnt offering had to be a bull or a ram, a male lamb. You couldn't just put a female lamb up there. You couldn't put a goat up there either. Well, I take that back. According to my table here, there's no goat, but I looked it up. A goat could be offered. Basically, any animal. We're not going to worry about the distinctions. I did that in Leviticus till it was coming out of my ears. So there's your burnt offering. And then the text says, or a sacrifice to fulfill a special vow or a freewill offering. Now, if you recall, the peace offerings, there were three types. There was the thank offering, there was the freewill offering, and there was the vow offering. A freewill offering was you just wanted to thank God, just in general. A vow offering was, God, I will give you this offering if you will do something good for me. Then something good happens, so you give him a vow offering. It's a peace. That's a kind of a peace offering. And then there was a thank offering, which was, I didn't ask you to do something, God, but you did something really good for me, so I want to thank you for it. And there were some distinctions between the peace offerings as far as to how long you could leave the leftovers. Thanksgiving offering, you had to eat the same day that you offered. There was no leftovers allowed. The vow or free will offering, you had 2 days, the day of the offering and the next day to eat. After that, you had to burn up the rest. We've already gone over that in Leviticus. So there's your, just basically your burnt offering and your peace offering. To make a soothing aroma to the Lord from the herd or from the flock. The herd is the cow, the flock is the sheep and the goats. So we go now to Numbers 15, verses 4 through 5. The one who presents his offering shall present to the Lord a grain offering of 1/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with 1/4 of a hin of oil. And you shall prepare wine for the drink offering, 1/4 of a hin with the burnt offering for the sacrifice for each lamb. So now we're going to go through the burnt and peace offerings, and we're going to see three elements of each. You're going to have some flesh, some meat. You're going to have some grain, some bread, and you're going to have some oil. Well, actually, the bread and the oil are to go together. That's the grain offering. So let me say that again. You're going to have the flesh, the animal. You're going to have the grain offering, which is grain plus oil. And then you're going to have a wine offering, a drink offering. And as we see here for the different kinds of animals, we're going to start with the small animals. We go to the medium-sized animal. We go to the biggest animal. And as we go, the size of the grain offering will increase and the size of the wine offering will increase to reflect the greater size of the animal. Now let's start with grain offerings in verse 4. The one who presents his offering, that's an animal, shall present to the Lord a grain offering. Grain offerings accompanied all burnt offerings and all peace offerings, not sin offerings and not guilt offerings. But burnt and peace offerings, you put grain, a grain offering mixed with it. Now the sin offering for the very poor, the poorest of the poor, that was a type of a grain offering. But that's not really a grain offering, that's a sin offering. But for the burnt and the peace offerings, you offered a grain offering. And of course, that was to show your thankfulness to God for providing you with the bread of life. It was to say, everything I own as far as my material prosperity measured in agricultural crops is given to you, God. I'm giving it to you. Now, somebody, I didn't put the site down, I don't know who said this, said that it was interesting that in all of these sacrifices, in this burnt and peace offering sacrifices, that bread and wine and flesh were involved, just like the New Testament communion meal. Now think about that. You got the animal for the flesh, you got the grain offering for the bread, and then you got the wine for the drink offering. Bread and wine and meat, just like the New Testament communion meal. They ate meat and they had bread and wine with it. Interesting. I wonder if that's a type, maybe, perhaps. All right, we're just going to start out with these measurements. I'm going to use the Hebrew measurements here because you can see the increase in size very easily with the Hebrew measurements. You can't see it quite so good with when it's converted to English measurements. But 1/10 of an ephah is about 2 quarts, which is close to 2 liters. And 1/4 of a hin is about 1 quart or 1 liter. But we're not going to worry about that. We just say the lamb offering, if it's for burnt offering here, 1/10 of an ephah is required and 1/4 of a hin of oil is required with the grain, and 1/4 of a hin is wine. Of wine is required for the wine offering. And we see this in verses 4 and 5. Notice that the amount of oil in the flour and in the amount of wine is exactly the same. Now here we see that this is the first place to indicate that wine offerings must accompany all burnt and fellowship or all burnt and peace offerings, according to the NIV Study Bible. So this is an addition to what we know in Leviticus. That's not in Leviticus. Now there's one little strange phrase here in verse 5. You shall prepare wine for the drink offering, 1/4 of a hin, with the burnt offering or for the sacrifice. Well, what is the sacrifice? Well, this whole context is talking about burnt offerings and peace offerings. So I'm assuming that the sacrifice is for the peace offering, for each lamb that they might sacrifice for either burnt offering or peace offering. But the phrasing is a little bit strange. I looked at a bunch of commentators, and naturally they had nothing to say about that. I did look at Numbers 15:5 in the New Living Translation and got some idea about what the verse means. For each lamb offered as a burnt offering or a special sacrifice. They put the word special in there. So the idea of a special sacrifice is something that's not regularly offered, and I think that sounds an awful lot like the vow of free will peace offerings, which were mentioned earlier in the first 5 verses. And so I think that's what this verse is talking about. Anytime you offer a lamb for a burnt offering or a vow of free will offering, which is a peace, two types of peace offerings, well, then you offer the grain with it and the wine with it. And so now we have established that peace and burnt offerings have wine and grain offerings offered with them automatically. Now, there is no wine, there's no grain offering and no wine offering for a sin or a trespass offering, but we're not talking about that here. We go down to Numbers 15, verses 6 through 12. Or for a ram you shall prepare as a grain offering 2/10 of an ephah. Now, we've gone from a lamb in the previous verse to a ram now in this verse. A ram is a male and is an adult, which is going to be older than a lamb, so it's going to be bigger. Or for a ram you should prepare as a grain offering 2/10 of an ephah, that goes up from 1/10 of an ephah, of fine flour mixed with 1/3 of a hin of oil, that's up from 1/4 of a hin of oil for the lamb, 1/3 for the ram. And for the drink offering you shall offer 1/3 of a hin of wine as a soothing aroma to the Lord. So the wine goes up from 1/4 hin to 1/3 hin. Verse 8, when you prepare a bull as a burnt offering, now that's the biggest animal of them all. When you prepare a bull as a burnt offering or a sacrifice, and I'm assuming that means peace offering, to fulfill a special vow or for peace offerings to the Lord, then you shall offer with the bull a grain offering of 3/10 of an ephah. So now we've gone from lamb 1/10, ram 2/10, bull 3/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with 1/2 in a hin of oil. So it goes from lamb 1/4 of a hin of oil, ram 1/3 of a hin of oil, and now with a bull 1/2 a hin of oil. You see how it gets bigger and bigger. Verse 10, and you shall offer as the drink offering 1/2 a hin of wine as an offering by fire. The offering by fire is the bull with all the associated offerings with it. I don't think it just means the wine is an offering by fire. And we see that the wine is now 1/2 of a hin, so it goes from lamb 1/4 of a hin, ram 1/3 of a hin, and now bull 1/2 a hin. Verse 11, thus it shall be done for each one as for each ram or for each of the male lambs or of the goats. In other words, I assume that what that means is for an ox, of course, the bull, you offer the bigger amounts as I just mentioned, for each ram, the intermediate amounts, and for each of the male lambs, the smaller amount. And then the goats is mentioned here, and I suspect goats goes in with the lambs, the same amount of the oil and the wine and the grain. Verse 12, according to the number that you prepare, so you shall do for everyone according to that number. And what does that number mean? It means according to the number of sacrificial offerings that you make. So if you have one lamb, it'll be 1/4 of wine, et cetera, et cetera. If you have two lambs, it'll be 2/4 or 1/2. You just go up proportionally. So according to the number of animals that you put on the in the flames, you adjust accordingly the oil and the wine. So now we go to Numbers 15, verses 13 through 16. All who are native shall do these things in this manner in presenting an offering by fire. Of course, the fire offerings in this context here is the burnt offering, the whole burnt offering, and the peace offering. I don't think it refers to the sin offering or the trespass offering because those two aren't mentioned here. All those who are native shall do this. That means all the native Israelites. Verse 14, if an alien sojourns with you, proselytes of the gate, proselytes of righteousness. Proselytes of the gate are people who are coming in to do business temporarily and decide to keep the basic moral laws of the Jewish law. And then, of course, a proselyte of righteousness is one who comes in and becomes circumcised and basically becomes a Jew. But at any rate, these aliens that are not natives, they have to keep the same law. Or one who may be among you throughout your generations. I assume that's the same thing, isn't it? A long-term alien, like a proselyte of righteousness. And he wishes to make an offering by fire as a soothing aroma to the Lord, just as you do, he shall do. So basically that law says there's no difference between the native Israelite and the sojourner, the alien. Verse 15, as for the assembly, there shall be one statute for you and for the alien who sojourns with you, a perpetual statute throughout your generations. And of course, that means as long as the law lasts after Jesus came, it wasn't a perpetual statute then, it was over. But that just means a long-term statute as long as the Jews were under the Mosaic law. As you are, so shall the alien be before the Lord. There is to be one law and one ordinance for you and for the alien who sojourns with you. Now, of course, this is spelled out, repeated, what, four or five times? Anytime you have aliens in a country, they do not have as many rights as domestic people. I know because I was an alien in China for 23 years, and I was always a little bit on pins and needles when there was a little tension, when something went wrong, because I wasn't a citizen. But in the case of the Israelites here, God is making it clear it doesn't matter whether it's a citizen or whether it's an alien. Same obligations and same rights. Now, this uniformity of the law as between natives and aliens is also seen in the Passover. Numbers 9:14. If an alien sojourns among you and observes the Passover to the Lord, according to the statute of the Passover and according to its ordinance, so he shall do. You shall have one statute, both for the alien and for the native of the land. NIV Study Bible says the Commonwealth of Israel would always be open to proselytes. They further say that the Charter of Israel's faith embraces all the nations of the world. So even back in the Old Testament, the Jews were not really an exclusive nation, not as exclusive as their reputation tends to make them. Think about the blessing, the famous blessing, the Abrahamic blessing, Genesis 12:3. And I will bless those who bless you, Abraham, and the one who curses you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. All the families of the earth, that's Gentiles. Jameson Fodson Brown says this, quote, there was scarcely any of the national privileges of the Israelites in which the Gentile stranger might not, on conforming to certain conditions, fully participate. So that's a great type, is it not? A great picture of the fact that the gospel of God is for everybody. It was not exclusive to one nation. We go now to Numbers 15, verses 17 through 21. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when you enter the land where I bring you, then it shall be that when you eat of the food of the land, you shall lift up an offering to the Lord. Of the first of your dough, you shall lift up a cake as an offering, as the offering of the threshing floor. So you shall lift it up. From the first of your dough, you shall give to the Lord an offering throughout your generation. So this is the law of the first fruits here. I don't believe this is in Leviticus. Maybe, I don't remember, but it's here. Now, notice that God says in verse 18, when you enter the land, he doesn't say if you enter, despite the fact that a lot of them are going to die in the wilderness. There's going to be enough young folks under 20 that are going to make it. The Levites are going to make it. The women and children are going to make it. Caleb's going to make it. So when they enter, and this, of course, assumes after the crops are planted, the first fruits of the crops have got to be made into some dough, and then it's got to be cooked into a cake, and that cake has got to be lifted up to God, to the altar, as a heave offering. Lift up is the way the NASB puts it. That's the way the King James calls a heave offering. I like that, a heave offering. You heave it up towards the altar. You wave it left and right, up frontwards and back, and you heave it down to up. From the first of your dough, you shall give to the Lord an offering throughout your generations. Now, as I said earlier, this first fruit law was only to be observed after the entry into Canaan. As John Gill says, it's real hard to grow crops in the desert. They weren't going to be growing any crops in the desert. They were nomads. They had livestock, but you can't grow crops in that desert. It's a nasty, nasty place. I've been there. There's no crops there. Now, verse 20 says, of the first of your dough, you shall lift up a cake. So that implies that the dough has to be cooked into the cake. The first of the threshed grain was to be made into a cake and presented to the Lord, as the NIV Study Bible says, and the symbolism is this. According to that note to the Study Bible, all blessing is from God because all produce belongs to Him. And so that first fruits is just a symbol of all the rest of it. And saying all this stuff that you gave us, God, it all belongs to you. And so this first fruit is a sort of a down payment of it all. It symbolizes all the rest that belongs to you. Now the quantity of that, of the grain that was going to be made to that dough, or the quantity of the dough, was not fixed by the law. That was voluntary. Now there was other first fruit requirements of the law. This was the first fruits of grain harvest here. But we also see in Exodus 22:29 this, you shall not delay the offering from your harvest and your vintage. The firstborn of your sons you shall give me. So we got the offering of the firstborn. Of course, you can't offer a kid to the tabernacle, so they had to be redeemed. What was it? How much was it? 5 shekels, I think it was. Had to be redeemed. And Exodus 22 says, the first fruits from your harvest. I assume that's the same ceremonies we just read here in Numbers chapter 15. And your vintage, that's in Exodus 22, that's your grapes. Now, Paul apparently referred to this offering of the first fruits in Romans 11:16. If the first piece of dough is holy, the lump is also. And if the root is holy, the branches are too. Now, the first piece of dough is referring to this first fruits. The of dough is in italics, apparently. Actually, so it's not in the original Greek. So it really is if the first piece is holy. It doesn't say the first piece of what. That's in the NASB. The Holman Christian Study Bible says, now if the first fruits offered up are holy, so we're going to assume it's the cake, just like the NASB did. It's a cake made out of dough. If the first fruits is holy, so is the whole batch. Now, by the way, it's somewhat unclear what that first piece of dough is, what Paul is referring to. Some people say it's the patriarch, the Jewish patriarch, Adam Clark Barnes, Albert Barnes, suggests that. Could be Abraham, who is the first patriarch. Could be the first Jewish converts to Christianity, as Adam Clark suggests. Could be Jesus himself. But the point is the rest of the Jews that are coming in are going to be holy like that first fruit, the first piece of dough. Now in verse 20, we see that the priest lift up or heave the offering. What happens after they heave the offering? Well, they eat it. Ezekiel 44:30. This is according to Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown. They eat it. Ezekiel 44:30. The first of all, the first fruits of every kind and every contribution of every kind from all your contributions shall be for the priest. You shall also give to the priest the first of your dough to cause a blessing to rest on your house. It says the first fruit shall be for the priest. So we assume they eat it at some point, maybe at home later. We go now to Numbers chapter 15, verses 22 through 26. But when you unwittingly fail and do not observe all these commandments, which the Lord has spoken to Moses, even all that the Lord has commanded you through Moses, from the day when the Lord gave commandment and onward throughout your generations, then it shall be, if it is done unintentionally, without the knowledge of the congregation, that all the congregation shall offer one bull for a burnt offering as a soothing aroma to the Lord with its grain offering and its drink offering, according to the ordinance, and one male goat for a sin offering. Now I'm going to stop right here. This is talking about when the whole congregation fails or screws up or sins. Now, how might the whole congregation sin? Well, I've got a quote here from the commentator Benson to give an example. Quote, if the whole body of the people be guilty of any neglect of the public ceremonies of religion or of any deviation from any of the rites instituted concerning the outward service of God, which might happen involuntarily and through ignorance. So they just screw up the ritual somehow, the priests do. Then they have a bull offered for a sin offering and they have a burnt offering with that bull sin offering. But anyway, these verses 22 through 26, which we're on now, refers to unintentional sins of the whole congregation. Now, we're going to get to verses 27 and 29 in just a minute. That talks about the unintentional sins of the individual as opposed to the whole congregation. Now, this law in Numbers 15, 22 through 26 is a repeat of Leviticus 4, 13 through 14. Some people say there's some differences. Let me read Leviticus 4, 13 through 14. Now, if the whole congregation of Israel commits error and the matter escapes the notice of the assembly, and they commit any of the things which the Lord has commanded not to be done, and they become guilty. And they commit any of the things which the Lord has commanded not to be done, and they become guilty. When the sin which they have committed becomes known, then the assembly shall offer a bull of the herd for a sin offering and bring it before the tent of meeting. Same law, except there's no mention of a burnt offering. And also the sin offering in Leviticus 4 is a bull, whereas the sin offering here in our passage of Numbers 15 is a male goat. Now, some people, Jameson, Fawcett, Brown, and Benson, maybe others, say that this is a different law. This is how Benson distinguishes the two laws. Quote, "The law in Leviticus 4:13, which appears partly similar to this, probably speaks of some positive miscarriage or the doing what ought not to have been done, whereas this, the law here in Numbers 15, this speaks of an omission of something which ought to have been done." In other words, Leviticus 4 is a sin of commission. Numbers 15, 26 through 29 is a sin of omission, and that's the difference. It's the whole congregation screws up. Maybe they just forgot the Passover, got the date wrong or something. I don't know. It's hard for me to really picture how they could really screw it up really that bad, but this is the provision. They have to offer a bull for a sin offering. And by the way, that's typical. When the whole congregation sins, it's a bull. We've already discussed that in Leviticus. Now notice, I haven't finished reading the passage to you yet, so let me pick it up here. Verse 24, "Then it shall be, if it is done unintentionally, this sin of the whole congregation, without the knowledge of the congregation." In other words, they didn't realize they had done it. It was inadvertent. It was unwitting. It was negligent. It was not intentional. "Without the knowledge of the congregation, it shall be that all the congregation shall offer one bull for a burnt offering as a soothing aroma to the Lord, with its grain offering and its drink offering, according to the ordinance, and one male goat for a sin offering." Now let me stop right there. The sin offering required here for the sin of the whole congregation is a male goat. But in Leviticus 4:13-14, the sin of the whole congregation required a sin offering of a bull of the herd. Two different animals required, which tends to make me think these are two different laws. Now, how might we distinguish these two laws? I've looked through some commentators and come up with three possible ways to distinguish the two laws. First way, Leviticus 4, I'll call that the bull sin offering for the sins of the whole congregation, the bull sin offering. That could be when the leaders of Israel deliberately commit a sin for the whole congregation, maybe like putting a golden calf, worshiping a golden calf on the Day of Atonement or something crazy like that. That's a sin of commission. That would require a bull sin offering, whereas Numbers 15, 20 through 26 covers the male goat sin offering, covers a sin of omission. They just forgot to do something that they were supposed to do. Maybe they didn't do the first, maybe they just forgot the burnt offering one morning or something, whatever. And so a male goat is not quite as serious as a sin of commission. The bull would indicate a sin of commission in Leviticus 4, and the male goat would be a sin of omission in Numbers 15. John Benson comes up with that idea. Another way to distinguish the two laws is that in Numbers 15, 22 through 26, the sins that would be covered there would include sins of individuals that affect the whole congregation. In other words, not just the whole congregation. Say the priesthood walked into the Holy of Holies or did something like that, offered the wrong animal for a sacrifice, something like that. That would be for the whole congregation because the high priest represented the whole congregation. But what if a sin of an individual that affected the whole congregation? I don't know what that would be. I can't think of an example, but Jameson, Fawcett, Brown, and Ellicott suggest that that sort of sin might be included here in Numbers 15, but not in Leviticus 4:13. Third way to distinguish the two laws, it could be very simply that Numbers 15, the passage that requires a bull sin offering, would only be for when the Israelites entered the promised land, whereas Numbers 4:13 was the law for the wilderness. Bull for the wilderness and a male goat for the promised land. Now why there would be a distinction, I don't know. But those are some suggestions that might be worthy of further study for a academic paper somewhere. But the very fact that the two different passages require two different types of animals for the sin offering makes me think that there are two different laws here. At any rate, it would be very easy to mess up all the commands concerning the sacrifices, and so there had to be a way to expunge that sin. We go now to Numbers 15, verses 27 through 29. Also, if one person sins unintentionally, then he shall offer a one-year-old female goat for a sin offering. That would be like if he accidentally touched somebody at a funeral, didn't realize what he had done, and he walks into the courtyard there, the doorway, and offers some kind of sacrifice, and he pollutes the priest. That's an individual thing, doesn't affect the whole congregation. In that case, he shall offer a one-year-old female goat for a sin offering. And the female goat is the typical sin offering, the required sin offering, for a commoner in Israel. If it was a leader of the congregation, it was required that a male goat be offered. That's back in Numbers, in Leviticus chapter 1. Verse 28, Numbers 15, the priest shall make atonement before the Lord for the person who goes astray when he sins unintentionally, making atonement for him that he may be forgiven. You shall have one law for him who does anything unintentionally, for him who is native among the sons of Israel, and for the alien who sojourns among them. Again, that repetition of the uniformity of the law for native and alien. And there's a lot of talk here also about unintentional sins, and that is, I don't know why, but a lot of people say that trespass offerings and sin offerings are only for unintentional sins. That is not true. You can go back to Leviticus 5 and find out if a person doesn't come to court when he's subpoenaed, that's intentional. When he makes a rash oath, in that case, a sin offering is offered, and that is a offering for an intentional sin. But mostly it was unintentional sins that the sin offering covers, as well as the guilt offering, which we're not talking about here. Numbers 15, 30 through 31, and we'll finish up this section. But the person who does anything defiantly, whether he is native or an alien, that one is blaspheming the Lord, and that person shall be cut off from among his people. Because he has despised the word of the Lord and has broken his commandment, broken the Lord's commandment, that person shall be completely cut off. His guilt will be upon him. Now that word defiantly means with a high hand. But now here's a problem here. If we just interpret doing anything defiantly as an intentional sin, well, intentional sins are covered in Leviticus 5, just as I said, failing to answer judicial process as a witness, failing to answer a subpoena, basically in modern terms, or making a rash vow, that's intentional. You're not cut off. You're not killed. It's intentional, but you're not killed. You have to offer a sin offering. But here it's defiantly. So how do you reconcile that? I would assume that somebody who does anything defiantly is worse mens rea, guilty mind, worse mental attitude toward the criminal act. In fact, it's an act of blasphemy. He's blaspheming the Lord, so he's doing it deliberately, trying to trash God's holiness, not inadvertently or not even intently, intentionally, like with a rash vow. He might make a rash vow, but that doesn't mean he's trying to trash God. It's still intentional. So intentional sins, unintentional sins, you get a sin offering. But boy, if you go out and just deliberately blaspheme God, bye-bye. Now, of course, cut off could mean to be banished, in which case it would be bye-bye. But most probably cut off means you are killed either by judicial process, probably, or even directly killed by God. Either way, you're a goner. So the lesson here is don't do anything defiantly. Bad results happen. Don't defy the Lord. That is just plain stupid. And there's a lot of people in this world who are not afraid of God, and they should be. Ladies and gentlemen, we're finished now with Numbers chapter 15, verses 30 through 31. In our next audio, we will finish up chapter 15, verses 32 through 41, and we will see a Sabbath breaker executed. That ought to be interesting. See you next time. Hope you enjoyed this audio.